Ever since the end of the year when I did a talk on the qualities of God, excuse me, there have been many people who've been calling me or telling me how profoundly it's affected them to choose a quality instead of to make New Year's resolutions. And so I decided I was going to do a series on the qualities of God, so every week at least one of you will have the exact talk that you've been waiting for. But in fact, I've also decided to write a book, and much like Mindy, and thank you to the people who came up to me last week and said, you want to be writing a book. So it was quite a nice confirmation. And so I would appreciate your stories and your experience as you begin to look at the quality that you have chosen for the year and see how it's affecting your life and see what a difference it makes and see how you're practicing it. So please send me those emails. Let me know what's happening with that. So today we begin on the quality of peace. And we're beginning the celebration, as Terry said, the season for nonviolence. And that's a 64-day period that was inaugurated by the Martin Luther King organization as well as the Association for Global New Thought that we're a part of. I'm one of the affiliate members of that association. And what they're looking at and what they've been doing for years, it started as a one-year thing on the anniversary of Martin Luther King's assassination and Gandhi's death. The 64 days between those two anniversaries was a one-year celebration of the season for nonviolence, and it actually opened up at the UN. And what happened is task force all around the country began doing projects to celebrate peace and to honor peacemakers in the neighborhood. And this has been going on now for several years, and it's now an ongoing thing and an ongoing celebration. Of course, we want a lot more than 64 days of nonviolence, but at the beginning of every year, it's a wonderful way to remember and to allow ourselves. I'm going to encourage all of you to start looking at the next 64 days, actually started 2 days ago, and if you're on our email list, you got my email about starting that, and you can get an email every day to remind you of a practice for that day and to take a look at 64 days. Imagine spending 64 days focusing on peace. As I was writing this talk, it became pretty heavy, so I decided to go and find a number of humorous jokes and stories about peace. I didn't think I'd find any. Huh. Was I ever wrong? Share the first one with you, and you may have heard variations of this, and a woman, could have been me, walking along the beach and finding this bottle on the beach, and she picked up the bottle and rubbed it, and guess what? A genie came out of the bottle, as you would have guessed. And so the amazed woman said, oh, good, do I get 3 wishes? And the genie said, you know what? That's an old myth. Right now, we genies have been really hanging around for a long time, and all we have left is 1 wish. So you can only have 1 thing. What is it that you want? She didn't hesitate. She said, I want peace in the Middle East. You know, I am tired of hearing of stories of war. See this map? I want these countries to stop fighting with each other. I want all Arabs to love all Jews and all Americans and vice versa. I want this world in peace and harmony. Oh, and the genie looked and said, lady, be reasonable. These countries have been fighting for so many years and thousands of years, and I'm out of shape, and I've been in this bottle for centuries. I can't quite do that. I'm not that good. I don't think it can be done. Please make another wish and make it more reasonable. Well, the woman thought for a minute and says, well, you know, I'm single. I've never been able to find a really right man. You know, one that's considerate and fun. One that likes to cook and help with house cleaning. You know, he's great in bed. He gets along with my family. He doesn't watch sports all the time. He's faithful. He's handsome. That's what I'll wish for. A good man that I can marry and make my partner. And the genie says, give me that map. So what if we could have 1 wish and it could be for peace? What would peace look like? And what happens when we focus on that quality? What would a practice look like on a daily basis? So start with the question, what is peace? How do we define it? the first definition that I really resonate with is peace is a feeling that accompanies the knowing of truth. You know, when something is true, don't you get that clunk in your stomach that says, ah, yes. You know, when you know something. In fact, it is the test that you're following God's will, if you will. You know, it's the very thing to know. How do you know when you know? Because you feel peaceful. Isn't that true? It's, you know, when you're trying to make a decision and you're not quite sure which is the right decision, and you go down one path in your mind and it gets you all agitated, and you go down the other path in your mind and it says, ah, yes. And that's when we know. And also, when you hear truth, what happens when people are arguing over something? Do you feel peace? Hardly. But when you start hearing the truth, even if it's something that you don't quite grasp yet, something in you just feels it. Something in you knows. We're using the word feeling here as a deep belief, as a deep knowing, a deep understanding that there is truth. And you know something? That's pretty automatic, isn't it? It's not something we have to work at figuring out how to find or how to get. Peace is a natural state of our being, because the natural state of our being is to live in truth. And peace is also an experience. It's the experience that everything that's happening is exactly perfect timing, just as it should be. Now, this is a big one. I could spend the rest of today, as I was writing this, I thought, this is a year's worth of talks. Forget about one, but just accepting things as they are, the way they should be. The minute we're feeling like we gotta fix this, something's wrong, what happens? We lose our peace. Anything in your life. Is there anything in your life you're trying to fix or change, or anything in your experience, in your work? Just think about what we do. We say, this isn't right. It's got to be different. And the minute we think it's got to be different, we lose our peace. So what if we became aware and really began to believe that there is a divine order in this universe? There is an infinite power in this universe, and it knows exactly what needs to be happening, exactly as it is happening, that nothing is apart from God, or as someone said, I like to spell God with two O's. There's nothing apart from good. If I really get that, then I keep in the experience of peace. The minute I feel like something's got to change, you know? So peace doesn't mean everything's going the way I like it. Yeah. Peace doesn't mean everything's going what we call well. Peace is the experience of knowing that there is a divine presence and a divine power, and it is all good. And that knowing is underneath even what may feel like chaos on the outside. That's a really important distinction here. Peace doesn't mean suddenly, you know, when you come into this teaching and you say, I choose peace, why don't I, you know, experience it in every single moment? There's a big difference between feelings and emotions. The war may rage. Things may happen. I've had a week, let me tell you. Every time I choose a topic, you know, I have to tell you, anything that could possibly have caused me to lose my peace this week happened. All little stuff, nothing major, thank God, you know. Every single thing, every phone call practically was somebody who was upset about something, or, you know, the silly little things that are not being finished around my house and all kinds of stuff. And I had a choice constantly to go with how my emotions were carrying me at the moment, or to go with the knowledge of peace. The Course in Miracles says it profoundly. I could choose peace instead of this. We always have a choice to choose what it is. You know, it's not the immediate emotion. They are happening automatically. Our emotions are like the buttons, you know. They happen automatically. We can't stop. We don't want to stop them. I don't know of anybody who wants to be emotionless. I remember once, I'm having a flashback, of years ago being in therapy and saying to my therapist, I think people who don't feel are better off. You know, as I was sitting there crying over something, and she says, but the depth of your pain is the depth of your joy. And so if you don't allow yourself to have these emotions, you know, you can shut off all of life. So the beauty of it is we can be in the middle of tears and still know peace. So we have to get the distinction. Peace is not the absence of emotion. Peace is causal, not effect. That's real important. I mean, that's the heart of our teaching, that everything is an inside job. You know, if we wait for peace because of what's happening, we're allowing our life to be dictated by what's outside of ourselves. So anything that shows up, comes along, happens in the universe, we can lose our peace. Well, that's not very powerful, is it? You know, just think about that. If we think that peace comes only when things are going well, then we're at the mercy of life, of all the things happening around us. If we remember that life happens as a result of what we choose, then we get to be cause. So peace is a quality of God, which means it's cause, not effect. I've been reading a book called Creating True Peace. Remember I promised a book a week at least? This is the book of the week. Creating True Peace by Thich Nhat Hanh. And in it, he talks about the Buddha nature and basically what I've just said in his language. Sometimes a negative emotion arises in you and takes over. Something upsetting occupies your mind and you cannot let it go. Ever been there? Your feelings are like television channels. If you do not like the channel that it's on, you can switch to another one. The Buddha called this the practice of changing pegs, replacing a negative emotion with a positive one. A peg is a big wooden nail that's used to fasten two pieces of wood together. If the old peg is rotten, you drive it out by hammering in a new one. Sometimes, however, when you try to replace a strong negative emotion with a more positive thought or feeling, the first emotion keeps coming back. He's in touch. This can cause a struggle inside of you. In such a situation, another way of dealing with your suffering is to recognize your capacity for being calm, for having understanding, compassion, and peace. This is your true nature, your Buddha nature, the awakened nature in you. When you bring to mind these qualities of great compassion and understanding, you acknowledge their presence within you, and you immediately suffer less. We talk all the time about focus makes the difference. So when you begin to focus, is it even possible for me to experience peace? Do I remember times of compassion? In the middle of your anger, can you remember being compassionate and feeling love? And you know what? Remember last week we talked about the Statue of Liberty and the elephants? You can't have one thought without the other. I mean, you can only have one thought at a time, is what I'm trying to say. I got two thoughts. No, one thought at a time. So you replace one thought with the other. So the minute we start thinking about our true nature, the minute we start recognizing and remembering the experiences of peace and unconditional love, we immediately begin to feel it, and we change what we're focused on. The Buddha nature is not an abstract notion. It's a reality you can touch and experience. Buddha nature exists in every cell of our body. The cells of our body aren't made up of only physical matter. Our body is matter. It's also a manifestation of consciousness. The one contains the all, and each cell contains everything else. The infinitely small contains the infinitely large. Every cell of our body contains all the talents, wisdom, goodness, and happiness of the Buddha, and also all of our spiritual and blood ancestors. Of course, every cell also contains within it the seeds of hell, of violence, of jealousy, of anger, and other negative emotions. But we can practice so that hell does not overpower the energies of mindfulness, understanding, and loving kindness in us. When you're suffering, you forget your Buddha nature, your goodness, and believe that within you is only suffering, only fear, turmoil, and hatred. Please, please, please remember to trust your Buddha nature. Isn't that beautiful? It's interesting. I got another passage this week from Bob and Shirley, who were here from Kettering, Ohio, came over to my house with our practitioners and gave us a passage from the private works of Joel Goldsmith. And many of you know Joel Goldsmith is someone dear to my heart. I love looking at the absolute truth, looking at the qualities. And, you know, try as I would, all week long I kept saying, I need to share this on Sunday. And there was a voice that kept saying, this is a little beyond what everybody's ready to hear. And so I didn't do it and put it in my notes. And this morning, as I usually do, I meditate and prepare for coming here, and the message came, get that passage out. And I went, no. Get that passage out. So I will share it and just tell you that this is, I believe, what Thich Nhat Hanh was saying, but using the Christ consciousness. A little different. When you're going through a period of unhappiness or illness or lack of peace or lack of prosperity or frustration, remember that this has nothing to do with your outer world. It's imperative that you grasp that. You'll be tempted to believe your external world is causing the difficulty, that it is distracting you or causing you pain. But this is not so at all. If you can discern that this represents a battle going on within you, you will quickly achieve victory just through the ability to discern that no person or condition or situation is doing anything to you. It's cause, not effect. This is the battle within you. Your higher self, whom you have embraced, the Christ, is seeking ascendancy over the mortal sense into which you were born. This is the Son of God in you, struggling to come into manifestation and expression. That's very powerful. Let me just stop for a moment. What we're saying here is when things are going wrong in your life, when you're feeling unhappiness, you're feeling a lack of peace, lack of prosperity, frustration, illness, instead of looking at the object out there as causing the pain, what we need to know is the very Christ being within us, that higher self within us, is longing to take over and to undo everything that is not like itself. So the stuff is showing up in our life simply, so that we can choose to live from that higher place. It has nothing to do with the stuff outside. It is all about a beautiful victory that we're being asked to participate in. The Christ ascending in us. I must not seek victory over outer conditions or persons, but rather let the Christ of me come into ascendancy, and it will be the light revealing that there is no darkness. The battle can never be against people or conditions or things. The battle must always be within yourself until your real self, your spiritual self, has risen. Then you will find that this outer world is already heaven. When you're tempted to fight any false sense of appetite, sin, disease, condition, lack, or limitation in any form, please relax at once and realize that this is not true. Don't condemn yourself. Oh, this is a big one. That's in bold print, so I have to bold it right now. It's don't condemn yourself. So, you know, why is this happening to me? I was with someone yesterday who kept saying, well, how come I'm not further along? You know, that's what we do to ourselves. Why am I at this age still here? Why am I, you know, like there's a here to be at. Like there's some place that we're supposed to get to. Isn't that what we do? Like we have made some false belief that says by this age you ought to have this. And if you don't, something's wrong. Right? Or you ought to be doing this. And if you're not doing whatever that this is, yeah, for all of us, it's, you know, better health, more money, better relationship, whatever it is that we think is the this. We're putting on out there and say, but I'm not there. Is there anybody there? No. Where is there? This is it. I mean, this is it. Exactly. This is it. Exactly where we are. You know, I'm only sharing this because it's exactly where I go. I'm not there. I have a lot of theirs that I think I should be at. Interesting. Don't condemn yourself. The battle is your Christ self trying to break through into manifestation. And as you relax from the struggle and stop condemning yourself and stop fighting evil and put up your sword and rest in quietness and peacefulness, the Christ will come into ascendancy. We must have self-respect. We must practice what we are taught. Somebody said that pretty boldly last week, remember? 24 copies of the CD were bought, so I guess you all want to practice. That's exciting. We must accept this principle that the Christ is breaking through into ascendancy and let the battle between the flesh and the spirit rage. It's no contest. We have nowhere else to go. Every knee is going to bend. So let the battle rage and let the Christ come into ascendancy. You and I can do nothing about that. We can't make it so, and we can't hurry it. That bothered me. Don't you want to hurry it? I mean, I just want to be there. I just want to get there. You know, I want to be in my higher self at all times and in all places with absolutely no... Wouldn't that be nice? You know, and that's really where my fight is. Like, it's not okay to be where I am constantly. So let it be. All we can do is surrender and be as forgiving of ourselves as we are of our neighbor. Well, that's an interesting line. Forgiving of ourselves as we are of our neighbor. The Master said, I have come not to bring peace, but a sword. The Christ doesn't come to you to lift you on a cloud nine existence. And this is, you know what? This is why people leave New Thought. They come into New Thought and they begin to practice and they say, my whole life hasn't changed overnight, or even in a year, or a month, or 2 years, 3 years. I've been practicing this, and my whole life hasn't changed. I know I'm 68 years old, but in 3 years, I expect everything to be different, and it's not, so this teaching must be wrong. It's really interesting. I'm going to practice over and over. The Master, the Christ, doesn't come to say, you're going to live on a cloud nine existence. It comes to tear you away from that self which must die one way or another. Even the good self, it has to die. When you're going through difficulties, it is so important to remember that it is the Christ that is doing it, is not the devil or Satan or the carnal mind or your job or your illness or your domestic situation. None of that is true. It is the Christ. It is temporal. It is doing this in order to take you out of your fleshly peace, your temporal peace. Do not be afraid. It is I. Powerful. They're powerful words that let us know that what's going on, what seems like the raging within us, is the longing of our higher nature, the Christ self, the Buddha nature, that which is the true part of us, is really longing to come in to total being and to be what drives our life. And when we're fighting it, what we're really doing is saying, I want to fix it. I want to find out. Rather than, I surrender to that which is in me already as peace. I surrender to that which is already the good. Thich Nhat Hanh also says, this is another way of looking at peace. When I have a toothache, I discover that not having a toothache is a wonderful thing. It's interesting. Now, you all know that I'm going to keep repeating this so I keep myself committed, is that I'm writing 100 things a day that I'm grateful for. Today is day 40, so we're on 4,000 things so far since the beginning of the year that I have been writing gratitude for. So some days I come up for being grateful for what is not happening. Interesting. I'm grateful that this didn't happen this week. I mean, think about that. All the things, just what he's saying. When I don't have a toothache, I'm grateful that I don't have a toothache right now. I'm grateful for just so many things we can be grateful for. It depends on what it is we want to give our focus on. It's interesting. You know, I did go to the dictionary and said, so what does the dictionary say peace is? And it says, first, it is a state of calm and quiet. And then it says it's the absence of war or strife. I think that that's how we tend to look at peace a lot of times. Like a mother thinks it's peace when the children are finally in bed, you know, or someone in a factory thinks it's peace when all the machinery stops and it gets quiet. That's what we think is peace. We think that when something ends, we have peace. Found another great joke called Retiring in Peace. It was a wise old gentleman retired and purchased a modest home near a junior high school. He spent the first few weeks of his retirement in peace and contentment. And then a new school year began. The very next afternoon, three young boys full of youthful after-school enthusiasm came down his street, beating merrily on every trash can they encountered. The crashing percussion continued day after day until finally the wise old man decided it was time to take action. The next afternoon, he walked out to meet the young men, the percussionists, as they banged their way down the street. Stopping them, he says, "You kids are a lot of fun. I like to see you express your exuberance like that. In fact, I used to do the same thing when I was your age. Would you do me a favor? I'll give you each a dollar if you'll promise to come around every day and do your thing." Kids were elated and continued to do a bang-up job on the trash cans. After a few days, the old-timer greeted the kids again, but this time he had a sad smile on his face. "The recession's really putting a big dent on my income," he said, "so from now on I'll only be able to pay you 50 cents to beat on the cans." The noisemakers were obviously displeased, but they did accept his offer and continued their afternoon ruckus. A few days later, the wily retiree approached them again as they drummed their way down the street. "Look," he said, "I haven't received my Social Security check yet, so I'm not going to be able to give you any more than 25 cents. Will that be okay?" "A lousy quarter," the drum leader exclaimed. "If you think we're going to waste our time beating those cans around for a quarter, you're nuts. No way, mister, we quit." And the old man enjoyed peace. I often think, too, the thing we think of peace most often, in other words, rest in peace. We see that at every funeral, at every gravestone, it lists rest in peace. And you know, peace is not the absence of noise, necessarily. You know, somebody was describing, if you have a car and the car broke down and didn't run anymore, it certainly would be quiet, but would that be peace? You know, is that what you really want, a car that's not running? So rest in peace. So I decided to look up rest in peace, and here's what I found. It was a new business open, and one of the owner's friends wanted to send him flowers for the occasion. And they arrived at the new business site, and the owner read the card, and it said, "Rest in peace." The owner was angry, and he called to the florist to complain. He told the florist of the obvious mistake and how angry he was, and the florist replied, "Well, sir, I'm really sorry for the mistake, but rather than getting angry, imagine this. Somewhere there's a funeral taking place today, and they have flowers with a note that says, 'Congratulations on your new location.'" You know, in the Bible, peace is far more of a positive quality than just the absence of something. When you translate the Hebrew word shalom, which we've often called peace, it means well-being, wholeness, and prosperity. So when you say shalom to someone, you're not simply saying peace, but you're saying all the qualities of God. You know, any of these qualities, if you choose to focus on any one of them, you get them all. God can't be separated. So the whole point of this exercise of choosing qualities is our minds can't focus on all of them all at once. So we choose one, and in choosing peace, what we have is total well-being. What we have is total wholeness. What we have is prosperity as well. How do we practice peace? How do we go about practicing? One of them is a practice of what we call nonviolent living. And here again, we could go on forever. It's nonviolent living individually, in our relationships, and in our world. Now, what about nonviolent living to ourselves? You don't have to raise your hand, but how many of us are living driven? like we gotta get this done. We gotta do these things. Like the world is gonna end if this doesn't all happen. To me, you know what? That's violence. We're doing violence to ourselves. We were never meant to live in the pace that our modern society is calling us to live. Just think about that. We have all these modern conveniences that are making it twice as hard for us to live at times. You know, what is it about? Think about that, really. We have all these things now. We have to acquire them. Then we have to upkeep them. Then we have to do all these things about it. You know, in the search, in the pursuit of happiness, I think our forefathers gave us something I really, really challenged when they said pursuit of happiness, because that's what we've been doing ever since. We've been pursuing it instead of accepting that it already is. Now, I constantly say to people and to myself, if amassing all these things and getting all these things done were really important and you were to die today, you know, what would you take with you of that? Mm-hmm. What's really important? Where is the energy going? You know, the violence to ourselves. What about all the overindulgence in whatever it is in our life? It's doing violence to ourselves. What about putting ourselves down? You know, most of us do violence to ourselves in the way we talk about ourselves, in the way we deal with ourselves, instead of seeing ourselves as this expression of God itself. How would you treat someone if you knew right through that door was coming God itself right now? What would you do? How would you treat it? What would you say? How would you experience it? If that's the truth about who you and I are, and if that's the truth of who we are, we're the expression of God, an individualized expression of God, then why aren't we treating ourselves as such? Look at the way we absolutely put ourselves down and find ways constantly of making ourselves wrong. Again, I'm talking to myself. Thank you for listening. You know, interesting what we do in that chatter that says, not enough. You should be doing this. What's wrong with that? Why isn't this happening? You know, anybody else have that going on? You know what it is. You know, peace. The practice of peace is looking in the mirror every single day and saying, I love you exactly as you are. A very interesting practice. If you haven't done it in a while, I recommend it for the week. You don't have to do it for the rest of your life. Every day this week, look in the mirror and say, I love you just the way you are. Let it be God's voice, that Christ nature that's trying to break through. Let the Buddha nature within you, let your higher self tell you what it thinks of you. Stand there and look in the mirror so you can hear it coming back. You know that song that most of us cry at. How could anyone ever tell you you were anything less than beautiful? How could anyone ever tell you you were less than whole? How could anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle and how deeply you're connected to my soul? How about saying those words as you look in the mirror? How could anyone ever tell you? That means you. That's the first person the violence needs to stop. We need to find the peace within ourselves. You know, there's a peace inside of us that's unchanging, that's transcendent. I love the passage where Jesus said to the disciples, let not your hearts be troubled, and do not be afraid. My peace I leave with you. My peace I give to you. That was a promise. You know, I know some of you have not read the Bible in a long time. I would highly recommend pulling some of this out and taking a look at the promises. What are the promises that have been given to us? My peace I give to you. It's yours. It's yours already. Are you willing to accept it? Are you willing to take it? Or are you hell-bent on living the way you want to live, putting yourself down? You know, I've given you a gift. Do you want to use it or not? That's what I hear happening here. And so many of us say, oh no, I'd rather live in pain and suffering. I would really rather focus on these things that aren't working in my life. You know, sometimes I think that I do that. I mean, I wonder why would I rather focus on what's not working rather than the gift that I've been given? So focusing on the qualities of God is an opportunity to focus on that gift that has already been given to us. In the Hindu tradition, in the Buddha tradition, we have the Vedic scriptures, and they say, the heart and mind can find peace and harmony by contemplating the transcendental nature, this is a little more wordy, the transcendental nature of the true self as supreme effulgent, brilliant, radiant, glowing, dazzling light. One of the things I do to practice peace when I'm not feeling it is simply picture light going through my body. And watch, you know, especially this is something that you can do when there's pain somewhere in your body. Just allow the light to go through your body. And especially let it go to wherever there is pain. And watch what happens. The nature of light, God is light. And what happens is you begin to feel that light and you can feel that peace. You know, when we get who we really are, we begin to experience it. The experience, Holmes says, the realization of our oneness with omnipresence brings peace. So all you have to do is remember the presence at the moment. And you know where the presence is? It's as close as your breath. All the Buddhist readings that I have been doing talk about two practices. The Buddha teaches basically two, three things. And one is simply breathing. It's just so interesting. And the other is smiling. You know, as I was reading this, I kept saying, all right, come on, something more profound. You know, can you say something else here? And I found myself laughing. You know, it's the old, you know, the student in me. I want to find the 15 ways of. And what it is, simply allowing ourselves to breathe in peace. Ruah, the breath, is another word for spirit. And when we remember that all there is in the universe is spirit, we can breathe that in. And so the minute we lose our peace over anything, all we need to do is stop and breathe. You cannot not feel peace when you let that breath come in real deeply. And now everybody turn around to a neighbor and smile at them. And see what happens in your whole being. You know? Now, does anybody feel miserable while you're doing that? Are you thinking of your pain? Come on, I want you to think of your pain and keep smiling. You know? Oh, I once had an exercise that's just flashing to me now. And do it right now. I know you like to play with me. Stand up for a moment. Put your hands in the air. Look up, smile, and say, I'm depressed! I don't believe you. Try again. One more. I'm depressed! All right, sit down. You physically, you see what happens? I mean, it's that simple to change. You cannot physiologically feel depression when you're in a state that says victory. So you simply, you know, if I said everybody look depressed for me for a moment, do you know how to look depressed? What happens? The body goes down, the head goes down. So all we need to do sometimes is change our physiology. Change the way we're sitting. Change the way we're standing. If you're lying in bed and feeling miserable, get up. I know this sounds totally ridiculous on some level, but really, all of the studies, you know, New Thought, religious science is open at the top. It's studying what science is teaching us. If you listen and read all of the studies, how to bring about peace in the world is to begin feeling it, is to begin experiencing it. Begin changing your state, we call it. If your state is a state of non-peace, then find ways to change that state. You cannot stay in depression when your lips are curled upward. It's impossible. The brain is wired to connect to the body. The body tells it how to feel. So if your body chooses to feel slumped and down and depressed, by all means, go for it. And go for it full blast. I always recommend, if you're really feeling that way, at least take 15 minutes to feel it well. So most of us fight it. You know, that's what happens. You know, write a letter and say, I honor you. I love this depression. I'm going to hold on to it for 15 minutes. And I'm going to let myself wallow in it as much as I know how. Really, otherwise you're fighting it constantly. So embrace it. This too is God. And then change your state. You know, it's not a matter of never having those emotions. The emotions show up. We don't want to fight our emotions. That's what makes us human. We want to embrace them. We want to accept them, allow them, hold them, but not hold on to them. Know that it is the Christ in you breaking forth, trying to come forth into ascendancy. But you have, and I have, so many old beliefs that we're holding on to that are keeping us back. Those beliefs about what we should be doing, those beliefs about what is the right and perfect thing, those beliefs that say, this is the only way, I'm not good enough, whatever it is we tell ourselves. You know, those old beliefs can be overcome by some simple practice. You know, peace is my gift to you. That's what the Christ said. It's interesting. I read about Henry David Thoreau when he was dying. His Aunt Louise said, have you made your peace with God? And Thoreau looked her right in the eye and said, I didn't know we had ever quarreled. It's wonderful. I also think that I have found inner peace. And I know I found inner peace because I was told long ago that the way to find inner peace is to finish the things you start. And just yesterday, I finished a bar of chocolate and then okay, all right. The Vietnamese monk Thich Nhat Hanh, in his book Peace in Every Step, has a foreword by the Dalai Lama, and here's what he says. Although attempting to bring about world peace through the internal transformation of individuals may seem difficult, it is the only way. Peace must first be developed within, and I believe that love, compassion, and altruism are the fundamental basis for peace. Once these qualities are developed within an individual, he or she is then able to create an atmosphere of peace and harmony. This atmosphere can be expanded and extended from the individual to his family, from the family to the community, and eventually to the world. And you know the old Chinese proverb, when there's light in the soul, there is beauty in the person. When there's beauty in the person, there is harmony within the home. When there's harmony in the home, there is order in the nation. And when there's order in the nation, there's peace in the world. Let there be peace on earth. Let it begin with me. Peace to others. So make a couple of points and we'll conclude. And we'll do peace again for the next 4 weeks. The peace... I read this passage and it really struck me as the way of peace with others. And a story tells that two friends were walking through the street in the desert. And there was a specific point of the journey that they had an argument. And one friend slapped the other one in the face. And the one who got slapped was hurt, but without anything to say, he wrote in the sand, "Today my best friend slapped me in the face." And they kept on walking until they found an oasis where they decided to take a bath. The one who got slapped and hurt started drowning, and the other friend saved him. When he recovered from the fright, he wrote on a stone, "Today, my best friend saved my life." The friend who saved and slapped his best friend asked him, "Why, after I hurt you, you wrote in the sand, and now you write on a stone?" The other friend, smiling, said, "When a friend hurts us, we should write it down in sand, where the winds of forgiveness get in charge of erasing it away. And when something great happens, we should engrave it in the stone of the memory of our heart, where no wind can erase it." Beautiful. The other practice of nonviolence towards other is seeing each person as if they were new every day. We do violence by remembering hurts from the past. It is very challenging for us to look at one another and not remember something that happened yesterday or something that happened a month ago. And we hold on to those things and we see each other as if we were that person still and don't give ourselves the opportunity to grow. George Bernard Shaw put it wonderfully. He said, "The only man who behaves sensibly is my tailor. He takes my measures anew each time he sees me, while all the rest go on with their old measurements, expecting them to fit me."
That's great.
Wonderful. What if we really began to listen to one another? Here's a practice I've decided to take on, and I'm failing a lot at it, which means I'm practicing. And that is deep listening. And when another person begins to speak, rather than react, rather than say, "But that can't happen around it," which is the way I do, with such a quick, wonderful mind, how about just listening? Let them finish. Let them say what it is they're saying. You probably catch me at that one failing 100 more times a day, but I'm committed. Deep listening is a way of showing that we truly believe the other person is new at every moment. I'm going to close with a quote from Thomas Merton. Because what we want to do is bring peace in the world. And we wonder how we can do that. We can have marches, we can have all kinds of demonstrations, we can get involved in politics, and all of that's good if that's where you're being led. Thomas Merton says, "If you are at peace, then there is at least some peace in the world. Share your peace with everyone, and everyone will be at peace."